Construction sale continues at 380 East Cypress Avenue in Reading with a great deal waiting for you.
The 2016 Kia Soul is the highest ranked compact multi-purpose vehicle in initial quality.
For J.D. Power award information, go to jdpower.com.
And now with $750 bonus cash and 0% financing for 66 months.
All 16 Fortunes and Optimus are priced to move with $1,000 bonus cash and 0% financing for 66 months. That's free money.
16 Sedonas, $500 bonus cash and 0% for 66 months.
17 Sorentos, $500 bonus cash and 1.9% for 72 months. And every new Kia sold comes with complimentary lifetime oil changes and tire rotation.
There's no better time than right now to head to Reading Kia.
Take a test drive, make a great deal, save money, be happy.
Plus government fees and taxes, any finance charges, any dealer document processing charge, and any emission testing fee on approval of credit subject to prior sale ends September 5th.
Reading Kia, 380 East Cypress Avenue, Facebook, YouTube, ReadingKia.com.
Hi, this is Rob Burrows from the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center. It's time for the Boondocker Ball. Join us Saturday, August 27th at Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center. You'll enjoy an evening of dinner, dancing, costume contest, live auction, a 1940s World War II USO style event, dance to live music from the Lou White Band. Ticket prices are $35 single, $50 per couple, or sponsor a table of 10 for $500, which includes a $400 drawing package. For more information, see NorCalVeteransMuseum.org or the museum Facebook page. For ticket purchasing information, call our offices at 378-2280. Also, see Bastiani Arms on Larkspur Lane in Reading, right off Cypress. Tickets also available at the Classic Cafe on Athens Avenue. Once again, for more information, call 378-2280. Thank you for your support. We'll see you there.
Hey, it's Bad Bob, producer for Free Fire Radio, the very best way to start your day in the North State. Every Monday through Friday from 7 to 9, Carl and Linda Bott bring you what's happening in our community, from politics to entertainment and the issues you care about. If you like what you're hearing, won't you please tell a friend that local live radio is what we're all about? I love my job. Tune in and find out why, right here, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m., on the home of Free Fire Media, KCNR 1460.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon.
Hi. How are you?
Well, you know how I am. You drove here with me.
Oh, that's right.
So you're joining We the People for our first hour in our series about Islam.
That's right. We're getting educated to the max on Islam the last 3 weeks.
Well, you know, first show we did, it's like, okay, we learned a lot, but we barely...
Yeah, we scratched the surface.
Yeah, so anyway.
We just barely opened the Quran on that, so...
Barely cracked the Quran.
We barely cracked it. Now we're...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we're leafing through it.
Yeah, we're goofballs. We're the comic relief. We bring virtually no information. That's why we have Peter Friedman with us again. Yeah. We're just here to...
ask the questions.
We're just here to lighten the mood. I don't even know if we're here to ask the questions. You did pretty well last time, though. He said you had a few good questions.
Yeah, good question. I got mm-hmm. that a couple times.
Bill's getting
week.
High fives here in the studio. It's like, oh, good job, Bill.
Yeah, good job. Pay attention.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I never got that in school, but, you know, there's always hope.
Can you remember that far back?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm still, you know, fairly vividly. Yeah.
Back when you were young tyke.
Yeah.
All right. So my name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundy.
Might as well confess these things early.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Yeah. Hopefully you'll forget by the end of the
show.
Yeah,
Bob's the one playing all the music, so Bob gets nothing but kudos from us. Pushes all the buttons and plays all the music. And you can find information for us if you want to, you know, send us email. Leave us phone messages, all that good stuff. It's online at wethepeopleradio.us. All right. Fast forward. We're here with our guest Peter Friedman. We won't jam up any more time because he's got a lot to tell us. And Peter, I called today's show The Quran Unmasked because that was one of your articles, but are we really doing that? Was that a lie?
Nope. Let's do it.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, you hit that on the head.
I got to thinking
Good
about it.
Question.
I was like, why did I call it that? It seemed like that's what we were doing. Okay, so where would you like to begin our, because this will be, for people that are thinking, oh man, 2 hours of this, oh yeah, mm-hmm, it's like time travel. All of a sudden it's 2 o'clock.
So we're going to have a good time.
Yeah, we have a good time, and it goes really amazingly fast. So where would you like to start with us today?
Well, let me start with a speech by Barack Obama here last week.
Oh, that'll make everyone mad. Good beginning.
Well, it's just it, the ignorance of this man, either as being naive or a propagandist, never fails to amaze me. At least once a year, and he did this in a speech again last week, and he, again, tries to tell us that Islam is a religion of peace.
Yeah.
And then what he does in the White House a week ago or so, when he celebrated the, I believe it was the ending of the festival of Eid or Eid, and he had the Muslim clerics and stuff over at the White House for this, you know, break the fast dinner. And then he introduces it as by saying, Assalamu alaikum. And you have heard that in countless instances in movies where one Muslim sees another Muslim and they say, Assalamu alaikum, you know. And the problem is that Obama says that specifically, you can go look it up, YouTube it. He says that the word Islam comes from the root word salam, S-A-L-A-M, meaning peace. And it's just an absolute fabricated, patented, bald-faced lie. Now, either the man does not know what the hell he's talking about.
I vote for that.
No.
Yeah, and didn't really pay attention when he spent 6 years in an Indonesian madrasa studying the Quran. I guess maybe he just went there to eat his lunch. The word Islam means submission. Now, I am reading right now in front of me, amongst other pieces of literature, the Dictionary of Islam that was published in India in 1885, and it can be found on my website, islamthreat.com. Go look under books. Look under Dictionary of Islam, and it's right there, okay? This is the easiest way to get to it. The word Islam is resignation to the will of God, okay? The word generally used by Mohammedans themselves for their religion. It implies submission to the divine will. Now, when you go to Salam, Salam says one of the 99 names or attributes of Allah. It occurs only once in the Quran in chapter, 59, verse 20. And he is described as the peaceful one. And then the greeting between one Muslim to another is Assalamu alaikum, the peace be upon you. So one has nothing whatsoever to do with the other one. The word salam is not the root word of Islam. Islam means absolute submission to the will of Allah. And, you know, I wish somebody would just get hold of this man and explain to him that, again, either he went to the madrasa that day to eat his lunch, or he's just trying to propagandize. So, moving right along,
AKA
with that in
lying.
Mind, what I want to do before we get into this, and the title of my presentation that I usually give is called The Quran Revealed, rather than Unmasked, but
sorry.
Those are synonyms, I think.
I'll fix it.
What I'd like to do is I would like to let everybody understand what I call the prism of history. You cannot look at past history through a contemporary lens, because what we think today and our attitudes today are far different than what they were, for example, in the time of Jesus or Muhammad. So there were customs 2,000 years ago in the Jewish community you know, that Jesus adhered to and his family adhered to and the community in which he lived adhered to, some of which we don't adhere to today. So you can't judge 2,000 years ago through our contemporary prism, if you will. So let me give you an analogy. I think everybody understands the story of the sword and the stone. If you haven't seen the Disney movie, then you can see Excalibur. Go ahead and rent that. But when we
King Arthur
think of the visual of the sword and the stone, the visual is that there is a sword, Excalibur, that is sticking out of a large rock, and the rightful king of England will be able to draw it out. Is that pretty much correct?
Sure.
Yeah, we're going to go with that one.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's take a look back historically at this story, because behind every legend there is some modicum of truth. Let's go back to the time of Arthur, and we're talking about roughly 400 A.D. in Britain, and Arthur was, in fact, a local tribal chieftain. By tradition, he and Guinevere are buried in the Glastonbury Abbey, by the way.
That's still Southwest slightly England. Controversial, but...
Well, this I said by tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill.
You know, there's
sorry.
Actually a stone there and a gravestone or whatever. However, Arthur did exist. Arthur's fortress was actually a wooden fort that was built on stone foundations on the top of a hill overlooking the Salisbury Plain in southwest England. And it is in a little town called South Cadbury, and I have personally on several occasions hiked up to the top of that hill, one time with Sir Geoffrey Ash, who actually excavated the site and has authoritatively determined that that was where Arthur's wooden fort is. The reason that we don't have anything left is because it was made out of wood. Okay, so let's go back to 400 A.D., and this is at the time that the Romans were leaving Britain, and they were being thrown out by the indigenous Britons, who all got together under Arthur in order to shove the Romans back to where they came from. So we're talking about 400 A.D. Now, it is a fact that Britain did not go through the Bronze Age. They went directly from the Stone Age into the Iron Age. Bronze was brought to Britain, in fact, by the Romans. And the Romans certainly were not going to teach the indigenous Britons how to make weapons out of bronze because they were the occupying force. So that being the case, imagine Fred and Barney Flintstone, indigenous Britons in 400 A.D. sitting alongside one of the roads outside their village. And along comes this guy on horseback named Arthur. And hanging from Arthur's belt is this magnificent gleaming weapon, which we have come to know as the sword Excalibur. So Barney and Fred Flintstone are sitting there with their weapons, which is nothing more than a stick with a rock tied to the end of it. And they jump up and they confront Arthur and they go, "Oh my God, that is a magnificent weapon. What do you call that?" Arthur says, "This is a sword." Now, this is very careful. You got to understand this. And Fred and Barney goes, "Where did you get it?" And Arthur replies, "I got it from stone." Why? Because how do you make iron? Now, Arthur is not going to spend 3 days there talking to two guys with a combined IQ of 50 trying to explain to them the iron-making process. So Arthur merely looks at these two guys and he says, "I got it from stone." And Arthur rides on down the road, and Fred and Barney run back to the village, and they go, "Oh, my God, you can't believe this guy we just met. He's got the most magnificent weapon we've ever seen. He got it out of stone." What's the visual?
Aha. The sword and the stone.
You got it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's tiny.
Now
okay, well,
you,
hold that,
now you
hold that thought so we can ponder that for a moment. Oh, we're not holding that thought. I thought it was time for a break, but Bob's nodding his head the wrong direction.
Okay,
press
so
on.
Now you understand the prism of history. So this will allow us now to kind of juxtapose ourselves back to roughly 200 years after Arthur on the Arabian Peninsula. Now, on the Arabian Peninsula, especially in the town of Mecca, you had a Jewish tribe that was called the Kharaza. You had Christians, because that whole area, if you recall, you know, 600 years after Jesus, the entire Holy Land, okay, was part of Christendom. So when you go back now and you take a look at this through that 600 AD prism, right, you find pagan Arabs who worship 360 idols that were in Mecca in the big black granite building called the Kaaba. Okay. The chief one was the moon god. We talked about that last week, Al-Ilah, which became Allah. And by the way, Muhammad initially did not want to use the term Al-Ilah because that would have implied one of the 360 gods. And originally, Muhammad wanted to call the one god Rahman, but then he figured that the pagan Arabs wouldn't really buy into that, so let's call it the moon god. And that was what he did. So he began to get these revelations, supposedly, in a cave outside of Mecca on the mountain called Hira, H-I-R-A. And he would go out there and he would sit and he would contemplate. This started about 610. At that time, he was married to an older lady named Khadija. Khadija provided him with several daughters. One of them was Fatima. Fatima ultimately married Muhammad's cousin Ali, and that's where the Shia sect comes from. They are followers of Ali. I'll get into that later. Anyway, I don't want to confuse you at this point.
Bill's eyes just bugged out.
Okay.
Your timing
during
is excellent.
During the life of Muhammad, when he began to tell people that he was having these revelations, which was a period of roughly 23 years until he died in 632. So let's take a look a little bit at Muhammad the man.
All right. Hold that thought. We are really actually having a break this time. Not a not a fake one like before. When we come back, we'll talk about Muhammad the man. And I'll be changing the title on the page. I've added a few things that you've sent to me. So if people want to go there and do a little extra homework, it is wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Peter Friedman. All 2 hours. We'll be right back. What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but
you're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
Hi, I'm John Scape, owner of Properties by Merit. We specialize both in residential and commercial real estate. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, call us today at 338-2112. At Properties by Merit, we help your real estate dreams become reality. Visit our website at pbmerit.com or call today 338-2112.
Properties by Merit is California Corporation licensed by the California Bureau of Real Estate. California BRE license number 01945816.
Holiday Harbor, we've got it all for you. But we're more than just great houseboats. We have the vacation you have been looking for without the drive or airport hassle. Fishing boats, patio boats, 47-foot party cruisers, wakeboards, jet skis, and stand-up paddleboards. If it floats or you can pull it behind a boat, we probably have it for your enjoyment. Visit Holiday Harbor, exit 695 of Interstate 5, or go to LakeShasta.com. Holiday Harbor, your own vacation in town.
Hi, this is Linda Bott. Like many working women, I have a hectic schedule. My daily radio show, stage performances, and time with Carl leave almost no time to focus on myself. And I know a lot of us are in that same situation. We need me time to maintain mind, body, and spirit. And that's where Wellgate Sports Club really shines. I love the aquatic training program at Wellgate Sports Club. Kathleen Cowling's Aqua Aerobics focuses on cardiac training through water resistance and buoyancy that features safe, low-impact movements. Wellgate Sports Club's saltwater pool is a unique way to get back to my body, feeling muscle groups grow stronger. Kathleen at Wellgate Sports Club helped me to find my new limits, and they can help you too. Call Wellgate Sports Club today at 768-1205, or you can check out schedule information online at wellgatesportsclub.com. At Wellgate, self-care is the best form of health care. Wellgate Sports Club, Eureka Way at Court in Reading.
Hi, this is Kyle DeFore with the NorCal Sports Hour. Tune in every Tuesday at 6 here on KCNR 1460 for all things Warriors, Kings, A's, Giants, Niners, and Raiders, as well as all your local high school standouts. Get your NorCal Sports Fix every Tuesday at 6 on the NorCal Sports Hour here on KCNR 1460 and KCNR1460.com.
KCNR, 1460 AM. If we're not talking about it, it's probably not important. KCNR, 1460 AM.
And we're back. That was the Barack Obama theme song. Just in case you got that confused with our guest.
So let's talk about...
Okay, let's do Quran Revealed some more, since it's no longer unmasked. Now it's revealed.
Now we're going to talk about... What, are we going to talk about Muhammad?
Yeah, we're talking about Muhammad.
Or...
Okay, let's kind of talk about Muhammad the man.
Muhammad the man.
There is an excellent, brilliant book that was written in 2014, and the man who has written this book and compiled this thing, in fact, is in hiding, kind of like Salman Rushdie with the Satanic Verses. His name is Frank Burleigh, B-U-R-L-E-I-G-H, and the title of the book is It's All About Muhammad. And I strongly recommend it, and if anybody really wants to understand what we're talking about, they have to get this book. It's in paperback. You can buy it on Amazon. It is brilliant. It is footnoted. It has chapter notes. It has all the sources in there and everything else, which obviously you have to assume that somebody writing something like this would have to put in there.
And give us his name one more time.
Burleigh, B-U-R-L-E-I-G-H.
Perfect.
Needless to say, I have an autographed copy.
Needless to say.
He in fact came to several of my presentations and sent me the book, and he said right after he got it published, and he said, you might be interested in this. It is interesting to note that up till about 150 years ago, the followers of Islam were not called Muslims. They were called Mohammedans.
Hmm.
And what has occurred is this metamorphosis over the last century and a half, roughly, from getting away from the word Mohammedan to Muslim. And Muslim in Arabic, like we saw last week, means one who submits to Islam. The reason that they wanted historically to get away from calling themselves as the followers of Muhammad is because of the actual source material and biographies that were starting to come out about the life of Muhammad. And if you accept the fact, or you should accept the fact, that number one, he was an epileptic, he was a serial killer, he was a butcher of the first order, he had people who disagreed with him immediately assassinated, he had his own death squad. It's very interesting to look at the source material. And the problem was that they were having a hard time selling this if people actually knew who the man was. So that being the case, then you have to get into the actual history of what occurred. So Muhammad was born in Mecca in 570 A.D. That's 570 years after Jesus. He's born in Mecca. In Mecca, there were three groups of people that predominated: the Jews, the Christians, and the pagan Arabs. Muhammad, from a small child, ran around town. He was raised by his uncle, by the way, and ran around town, and he would sit and he would listen to stories that came from the Old Testament and the New Testament. And he, of course, being one of the pagan Arabs, was very familiar with the pagan rituals, with the 360 idols and the Kaaba and stuff like that. So he absorbed this information until he got to the age of about 46, 47. Prior to that, he was keeping all of the books and records for this woman named Khadija. Khadija in Mecca was a woman who was involved in caravans. She was very wealthy. She was 15 years older than Muhammad, and he ultimately married her, and that's where this daughter Fatima came from, who married Ali, who was the cousin of Muhammad. So the Muslims, in trying to validate the fact that the Quran is the literal revelations from Allah, posed the argument that Muhammad was illiterate and he couldn't read or write. So we have a contradiction going into this. Here is a guy who is keeping all of the caravan records and books, collecting the money for Khadija, yet he couldn't read or write. So that's somewhat problematic in trying to defend it. The Quran was not written down in something like its present form during Muhammad's lifetime. What would happen is Muhammad would gather followers. Muhammad would recite these revelations that he theoretically heard from Gabriel in the cave outside of town, where he said that Gabriel was transmitting this information to him that was written in Allah's book that existed in heaven. So in other words, he was trying to sell the idea that the Quran already had been written down on tablets. The tablets were in heaven. And because the Jews and the Christians screwed up their scriptures, that God was making one last attempt here to salvage mankind, and now he was going to try it through, you know, the Arabs that were living in Arabia. So, again, there was no codification of any of this scripture during Muhammad's lifetime. What happened was Muhammad dies in 632. And then Abu Bakr, who is his right-hand guy, he takes over, and Abu Bakr departs the scene within a few years. He dies, and then the next caliph, and this has to do with the caliphate, all right, that they're trying to put together over there in Syria. Abu Bakr then is succeeded by Umar. And Umar is out there pillaging and plundering until Umar is assassinated by Uthman. And Uthman, the third caliph, all of a sudden realizes, you know, we don't have all this stuff actually written down. There are various stories in the different provinces, because what was happening was people would hear what Muhammad was saying while he was alive. They would, some of them would write some of this stuff down. And you know, when it gets to revision 4.2, things get changed.
Right. We've all played that game where you say something,
exactly.
Whisper, 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 and by the time it gets to the other end,
exactly.
It's totally
it's
different.
The old whisper game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the whisper game that we used to play as kids.
Sure.
Okay, so finally Uthman decided that this was worthy of codification. Let's get all this stuff in here. Let's get it authenticated as best we can. And he assigned two people who were followers of Muhammad at that point, who were still alive. This was roughly in 650. So we're talking about 18 years after the death of Muhammad. And these two guys now sent word out all over the Arabian Peninsula to send in this information. Okay,
so, wherever you've got it written down. Yeah, it should be pretty accurate.
Send it all into headquarters. And these two guys said that if we cannot find two people who will authenticate this particular revelation, and the revelations came in seven different Arabian dialects. So they finally had to pick one. And the dialect that they picked actually was not pure Arabic. It was 70% Syriac.
So lost in the translation could have played a heavy role.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was just, it was amazing. Okay, so moving right along, these guys had to go through these mountains of documents that had been sent into headquarters, and they had to decide what they were going to keep, and then they presented it to Caliph Uthman, and Uthman said, okay, if you guys agree on this collection, I want you to burn all the other stuff.
Nice.
And that's kind of where Salman Rushdie came in with his book back in 1989 called The Satanic Verses, because there were verses, in fact, that people had sent in who had witnessed Grand Mal seizures by Muhammad, and there were two spheres of influence there. One that was saying that, you know, Muhammad had this, you know, sickness, and the other was saying, oh, no, this is how he's getting the revelations during these seizures. Hmm. So, again, this is about a man, nothing divine about him. So in the meantime, under Uthman, they created what is today the Quran. And that has been around for the last 1,400 years. It has 114 chapters in it called surahs, S-U-R-A, or books. And it has 6,247 individual verses that are contained within those 114 books. The first 89 of the 114 were actually written down in Mecca. And they were written down in Mecca during the period of time from about, I would say, 600 to 610, until Muhammad was chased out of Mecca and he fled to Medina, about 200 miles north of Mecca, and that's when there's no more Mr. Nice Guy. So the first 89, or these 89 chapters, they're really not the first because they're all interspersed with one another. There's no rhyme or reason as to why they exist the way they exist in the book. But these 89 chapters that were written down to emulate what Muhammad was trying to convince the Jews that he was the third and final prophet after Moses, Jesus, and now Muhammad.
So the first 89 are pretty much the love and peace.
Yes, chapters. Those are the passive ones. Those are the ones that were written to convince the Jewish community, because there's a lot of the Old Testament material in there, most of which he got wrong, which we'll go into in a little while. And I'll tell you about the contradictions in the Quran. So it's like one of them is like Miriam, who was the sister to Abraham to Moses and Aaron, and they've got her teamed up with Abraham, you know, instead of Sarah. I mean, it's just they're all wrong. They're they're just absolute errors in the Quran, which then leads one to wonder, gee whiz, if this is the literal word of God, how did God get it so wrong?
Yeah.
Right.
So we'll talk about that in a few minutes. Okay, so you've got these 89 books or chapters in the Quran that define the faith as Muhammad saw it, trying to convince the Jewish tribes that he was his third and final prophet. The balance between the 89 and 114 now are all of the violent and hatred-laden books that were written in Medina or revealed in Medina, most of which abrogate the peaceful verses. So that if you go to book 2, verse 106, it's called the abrogation verse. Muhammad had a problem when he got to Medina because he goes, okay, now I'm trying to convince everybody that, you know, this is something that is peaceful and compassionate, and now I have to do this no more Mr. Nice Guy, and we're going to do it by the sword. So how do I now turn around and contradict what I've revealed earlier? And so now we get into the abrogation verse, book 2, verse 106, that says specifically Allah knows all. Allah will, you know, replace one verse for another because Allah knows best. And so he turns around, he blames it on God again, okay? And once again, God is usurping everything else that's going on there, because the majority of the Quran is written in the first person. It's not in the third person or something novelistic, if you will, all right? So God says this and God says that, and God wants you to do this, that, and the other thing, so that the way it's written in the Quran, these are actual commands and religious obligations that a Muslim has to adhere to, okay? So that Muhammad, you know, in theory, could wave these revelations at people and say, here's what you need to do. Okay, there are 109 specific war verses that are in the Quran that extol Muslims to make war on non-believers.
And this is after the original 89 chapters. This is later, after he got to Medina.
This is right. These are the verses that were that came out of Medina that will now abrogate the peaceful verses that were originally revealed in Mecca. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, once you go to Medina, no more Mr. Nice Guy.
I'm not kidding around.
The last 21 chapters have 109 verses in there talking about cutting heads off and burning them and all the rest of this stuff, because they refuse to accept Muhammad as the next prophet.
And there are 21 of those chapters.
There's 21.
Okay.
So there's 93. I'm sorry, there was 93 revealed at Mecca and the last 21 from Medina. So.
Okay.
And again, the Meccan revelations define the faith, and the Medinan revelations translated the faith into actual action. Muhammad got run out of Mecca finally in 622, went to Medina, and then that was the end of Mr. Nice Guy down there. So he shortly thereafter decided that he was going to go back down there to Mecca, which he did. He put a small army together, and he conquered the town of Mecca, and he went into the Kaaba, and he destroyed all of the idols except for the moon god, and that's Al-Ilah.
Mm.
And that Al-Ilah means the one, because then he decided if we leave that one god in there, which is still there, by the way, then that would be relevant to the pagan Arabs.
Oh, is that why they have a crescent moon on the...
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. And then
you're like Poirot.
The crescent moon is on top of every minaret of every
right.
mosque, and it's
mm-hmm.
on most of the flags of the 57 Muslim-controlled nations. So let me see here.
Okay, before we... Bob, do we need to take a break? I think we're getting close.
We're waiting for the high sign.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Bill's trying to do my job.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
trying to be relevant.
What's really interesting, too, is that in South America, which the current pope is very well aware of because he's a South American Catholic pope, is that the revelations that came out of Medina gave the birth to the liberation theology movement, which is really interesting. What you couldn't get through peaceful means, you took through power and force.
Mm-hmm.
And we know Reverend Wright and what he has been done. So anyway, let's take a look at the Quran. What does it say? Why are the people that are mentioned in the Quran so oppressed? Why are so many of them extremists? And where does this violence actually come from? There are five pillars of faith of Islam. The first one is the Shahada. It's the testimony of the faith of a Muslim, and its acknowledgement that Allah is the one true God and Muhammad is his prophet. In theory, if you are not a Muslim and you are captured by them and you immediately acknowledge that Allah is the one true God and Muhammad is his prophet, they can't kill you because now you become a convert.
Oh.
The second pillar is reciting the prayers five times a day, again acknowledging the very first thing in this salat of the prayers that are recited five times a day is, the again, you're acknowledging that Allah is the one true God and Muhammad is his prophet. If you recall back in 2007, Barack Obama said that the call to prayer at sunset is one of the most beautiful sounds on earth. You got to wonder.
Yeah.
Okay. The third pillar is fasting. You have to fast on specific occasions like Ramadan. The fourth one is paying zakat, or the tax to fund jihad, number seven, we talked about last week.
Right.
And the fifth pillar is making the pilgrimage to Mecca at least once in your life. As you recall, the last pilgrimage last year, there was, 1.3 million Iranians that were trampled to death, I think?
Whoa.
Yeah, go look it up.
They take it serious.
Every year on the Hajj, hundreds of thousands of Muslims, devout Muslims, are trampled to death as this entire crowd of 30, 40 million people is marching around the Kaaba in Mecca.
They don't know how to stay in line.
They're not very good marchers.
No.
Yikes.
Well, this is very true.
They cut
in line. They don't know how to give a parade like the British.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay.
Somebody needs to teach these people a lot of goose step. We need to take quick break here, and we'll come right back.
Okay.
Wow. I always walk out of here and feel like, okay, I need about 100 more books about this. And I linked...
need to write them a book on how to stay in line.
I know. I did link the book information that you gave us before. It's all about Muhammad. So that's on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. One-stop shop for you. Go there and just click away. We'll be right back with Peter Friedman.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
It's the Ron Largent Show, talking about Reading. Our great community sponsors are Revolve Solar, the Shasta Athletic Club, Gold Star Mortgage, Mast Roofing, Chronic Service Master, and Authority Property Management. Great community members. Every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, hear what's going on. Many interesting topics. Our goal is to inform, so tune in each Saturday at 9 to keep informed. The Ron Largent Show, it's the happening place.
Playing ball is a fun and healthy activity. Unfortunately, the cost of organized sports participation is out of reach of many children. Artwood and Play Ball Foundation's mission is to increase local youth sports participation through education, providing equipment, and fee assistance. Join us Saturday, August 27th at 10 a.m. for the Home Run Derby fundraiser at Big League Dream Sports Park, sponsored in part by Tugwell Roofing. Admission is free and includes a kids' venue, raffle prizes, concessions, and good old-fashioned home run hitting. For more information, visit us on Facebook or call 440-4211.
When you need prompt, dependable transportation, you can count on Reading Yellow Cab. At Reading Yellow Cab, they have a deep commitment to serve the public and provide dependable first-rate service. Whether you're heading out for a night on the town, need to get to work, or you're just running errands, relax and let Reading Yellow Cab do the driving for you. Reading Yellow Cab is your number one choice for reliable, friendly transportation and clean, comfortable cabs. Give them a call at 222-1234. That's 222-1234.
Hi. I'm Rick Hughes, host of the newest talk radio show heard here on KCNR 1460 AM on the dial. It's called the Flot Line, F-L-O-T, Flot Line. It'll be heard every Sunday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. Come join me and learn how God has tremendous problem-solving devices that you can use to stop the outside sources of adversity before they become the inside sources of stress. That's the Flot Line with Rick Hughes every Sunday morning here on KCNR at 7 a.m.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
I wonder, wonder who wrote the book of love. Tell me.
This is pretty good marching music.
I've got to
kind of catchy theme, too, maybe. Maybe it'd be like subliminal advertising.
Yeah.
Who cut the head off?
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You have to have a little forced comic relief there, otherwise, you know, freak out. We are here with Peter Friedman, learning all sorts of things. And, okay, Peter, how many people got trampled on the thing? We got so carried away with the fact they got trampled, we forgot how many there were. It was a lot, though.
Oh, there were over a million of them.
They trampled a million people in the pilgrimage to Mecca because they were...
They were in the parade that was marching around the Kaaba. There were something like 25, 30 million people at a time. If you look up the Hajj...
How do you spell
it? And Google the Hajj. Google the Hajj 2015.
How do you spell it?
H-A-J-J.
Aha, see, I knew there was a trick.
I bet somebody yelled, "It's Muhammad," and they all started running.
Yeah, what the heck?
Horrible.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Pictures. Oh, my gosh. What caused the deadly stampede?
Mm-hmm.
Well, CNN's got it all figured out. I better get on that. Okay, so that's nuts. And, sorry, we got all distracted there.
Oh, no problem. Okay, so one of the major religious tenets of Islam and the Quran is the Arabic word taqiyya. Taqiyya means religious deception. To use one word, it's lying. Okay? And it's interesting because there are three instances where a Muslim is allowed to lie. The first one is if a Muslim is captured in battle and he can say, well, okay, I'm not going to be a Muslim anymore in order to save his life and fight another day. The second is to advance the cause of Islam for world domination so that the only religion left on the planet Earth will be Islam. And the third is you're allowed to lie to your wife in order to keep peace in the home. And that's found in chapter 66 of the Quran. It's a very funny story about Muhammad. I think I told you a couple of weeks ago about Mary.
Let's not dwell on that one, Peter.
Yeah. And Muhammad, Aisha caught him sneaking into her tent, you know, and so he got this revelation, theoretically, came back the following morning, and he said, no, God says it's okay to lie to your wife in order to keep peace in the home. So.
Yeah.
It's like those car commercials where they're racing around and doing stupid things with cars, and it says this is for professionals only on a closed track.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I always tell guys, don't try this. This isn't going to work.
Yeah. This isn't going to work in your house.
Okay, so other than that, the rest of it is
That. Yeah. Okay, all so right. There's Obama standing up there saying, the word Islam means peace, and it's BS.
Do you just go crazy every time he does it?
So moving right along, what's interesting is, the contradictions that are in the Quran. Now, the Quran, strangely enough, and this is all very well sourced. People can look it up for themselves. There's a number of books on the subject. Been written since 1860, I think it was, the first legitimate book by a German named Nolke, who decided to... go into it and really take a look at it. So when you take a look at the Quran, in fact, and you look at the language, even though the Quran says that it is written in pure Arabic, again, taqiyya, that's not true. 10% of the Quran, when you read it, is Hebrew. Then you have about 10% is in Greek. You have 5% in Persian. and the last 70% is in Syriac, which also includes Aramaic and Palestinian Syriac. So Aramaic was the language used basically 2,000 years ago by the commoners, a lot of the Dead Sea Scrolls, as a matter of fact, from 3,000 years ago are written in Aramaic. This was the language of Jesus, essentially, 2,000 years ago. So you kind of wonder how all of these crept into the Quran as we have it today, considering that it was not actually written down and codified during the life of Muhammad. So there were obviously other people who were involved, just like the Old Testament was written over a period of 700 or 800 years by a lot of different people making contributions. The same thing has occurred precisely with the Quran. Because of all of the foreign words and the different grammatical errors in it and everything, you know, you can either say Muhammad got it wrong because of his background, or Allah got it wrong and didn't transmit it through Gabriel correctly, or it's a bunch of garbage. So pick one. Your choice. Okay, so there's some glaring omissions that are in the Quran, which is really interesting. Now, remember that Muhammad spent a lot of time in Mecca hanging around, for example, the Jewish tribe that was living there named the Quraysh. So he heard a lot of Old Testament stories. Now you go into the Quran and you read some of this stuff, and there are some glaring errors and omissions in stories from the Old Testament. One of the most glaring is that 27 times in the first 89 chapters that are written in the Quran, Muhammad tells the story of Moses' confrontation with the Egyptian pharaoh and the Exodus. He has repeated this same story once every three chapters out of these 89 chapters. In all of these 27 tellings of the Exodus by the Quran, not a single one of them mentions the Passover. Does not mention the Passover. It doesn't mention the 10 plagues. It doesn't mention any of that. What it does mention, however, in two different places in the Quran, one of these chapters says that Pharaoh and his army were drowned when the Red Sea unparted. And then in another verse, it talks about, in another chapter, it talks about the Pharaoh and his army not being drowned and actually surviving. So we'll get into that in a minute. But anyway, there's a whole bunch of them. For example, if you're familiar with the Jewish festival of Purim, Purim celebrates the story of Esther and how she lived with her uncle Mordecai, and the mean, nasty, you know, prime minister's name was Haman, who was a Persian, and the king Ahasuerus. And Haman was the prime minister to Ahasuerus, and Haman got it into his mind, and I'm just kind of, you know, paraphrasing the story of Esther in the Bible, got it into his mind that the Jews were not loyal to the king Ahasuerus, and they should all be destroyed. In the meantime, Ahasuerus, puts together a beauty contest to replace his wife Vashti at that point. And Mordecai tells Esther, look, you've got to quest to be the king's new bride. And she does ultimately, and Ahasuerus picks Esther as his new bride, and Esther finally goes in front of Haman to Ahasuerus and says, I'm sorry, essentially, I'm not going to be your bride for long because your prime minister Haman over there is going to have all of us destroyed. And what happens? Ultimately, Haman is destroyed. Muhammad in the Quran, however, when you go to chapter 28 and you go to verses 5, 6, and 8, Muhammad in the Quran has Esther and Haman being associates of the Pharaoh of the Exodus story which occurred 900 years before. Now, you would think that God would have gotten it right. So either Muhammad wasn't listening attentively in the cave, but there are contradictions throughout the whole thing.
All right, we're going to come back with you because the news is going to cut us off in like 1 minute. We're chatting with Peter Friedman. We've got 1 hour left. We are talking about Islam revealed, or the Quran revealed. Sorry, I got it wrong. Here's the other word, right? Dang it. You can find all the information at wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
Polls are still split over Donald Trump for president, but he's gaining more support by the day. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton, who serves on the Armed Services Committee, says he feels positive about Donald Trump's ability to run the country.
I am confident that if the American people elect Donald Trump as president and a Republican Congress, that this country will be safer in the world, our streets will be safer, and we will be more prosperous.
That audio courtesy of Fox News Sunday. Belgian police are treating an attack on two police women Saturday as a terrorist incident.
The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility for a weekend machete attack that wounded two police women in the Belgian city of Charleroi. It called it an act of reprisal executed by one of its soldiers. Belgian prosecutors identified the assailant as a 33-year-old Algerian who was known to police for criminal offenses, but not for extremist acts.
That's correspondent John Thor Dahlberg. A Pennsylvania couple who'd been featured in news stories about their difficulties getting medication for their daughter have been found shot to death along with their three children. The district attorney's office says an apparent murder-suicide note was found in the family's Sinking Spring home, and a handgun was found near one of the adults. One of the two skydivers who died plummeting into a Northern California vineyard yesterday was 18 years old and jumping for the first time. That's according to the owner of the skydiving center where the accident happened, who said that the young man's brother and others were there watching when he hit the ground with a veteran skydiving instructor. Sheriff's officers say that the men's parachute did not open. The National Hurricane Center says Tropical Storm Javier has formed off Mexico's Pacific coast with winds of about 45 miles per hour. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Once upon a time, a girl named Goldilocks was searching for the perfect mattress. One was too hard.
Ouch.
One was too soft.
Yeah.
But one was just right. Then, when she tried to sleep, it squeaked, it rattled, it moved. It was the old metal bed frame, and it was unbearable.
It's time to get the Embrace Bed Frame by Knickerbocker. Why would you spend thousands of dollars on a quality mattress and then put it on an ugly, noisy metal frame that you have to hide with a dust ruffle? Get the Embrace Bed Frame by Knickerbocker. It will eliminate noise, motion transfer, and protect your mattress from sagging. Knickerbocker foundations are made in the USA and come with a limited lifetime warranty. They're available in 5 colors, look beautiful, and require no tools for assembly. It's time for a better bed frame from Knickerbocker.
Finally, Goldilocks got smart and got a Knickerbocker Embrace Bed Frame, and it was just right.
Visit your local furniture or mattress store and ask for the Embrace Bed Frame by Knickerbocker.
A parking lot sting sends three people to the hospital. Here's correspondent Rhonda Rockstra.
But this time, no police were involved. Two adults were in serious condition, a third in good condition after the trio got stung by bees that escaped in a Walmart parking lot in southeast Oklahoma City Saturday. Emergency officials say the incident began around 10:30 a.m. when a person selling beehives met a buyer in the parking lot and the bees somehow escaped. Beekeepers were called in to gather the insects. A firefighter was also stung but did not need medical attention. Rhonda Rockstra reporting.
Workers are building a stone wall around a Walt Disney World lake where an alligator killed a toddler earlier this summer. Disney officials told the Orlando Sentinel that the barrier is part of the new security plan following the death of 2-year-old Lane Graves. The Nebraska boy was dragged into the Seven Seas Lagoon in June. His body was found days later. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin. Republican Governor Charlie Baker has signed into law a bill requiring men and women be paid equally for comparable work in Massachusetts. Correspondent Jeremy House has details.
The bill includes what supporters say is a first-in-the-nation provision barring employers from asking prospective workers to provide a salary history. Women are currently paid on average about 82% of what their male counterparts make for comparable work in Massachusetts. For black and Hispanic women, the pay gap is even wider. The bill attempts to define what constitutes comparable work, in part by outlining legitimate reasons for differences in pay, including seniority, geographic location, experience, education, or training. Jeremy House reporting.
The weather's been causing problems on day two of the Rio Games. Nasty winds forced delays on the tennis courts, whipped up treacherous waves forcing the rowing regatta to be called off. Two boats capsized in the choppy seas during the morning practice. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio on this sunny Sunday.
Getting a real education on the Quran today.
Exactly. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Bob's coming up with all the snazzy music for us so we can get a little chuckle in our serious topic here with our good friend Peter Friedman. There's a ton of information on this subject on his website, islamthreat.com. He also gave us the 411 here on itsallaboutmuhammad.com and the book, It's All About Muhammad. I've linked that on the website, too. It's really good. We've done 1, 2, 3, 4. This will be our fifth show with Mr. Friedman since 2012. We seem to always have him on around this time of year. But only in the
our third show since July 24th.
but only in the even numbered year, so we're like making up for all this lost time, you see, because we missed 2011 and 13 and 15. See, so we gotta add some other shows in.
Yeah, but it's been great though. We've had consecutive appearances here, and we've covered a lot about Islam.
Tons of good
Quran.
Stuff.
Yeah,
because we get lied to about it all the time, mostly from the president. So back to you, Mr. Friedman.
Great. Just to interject something that I always try to explain to people, which I find interesting. If you took the Old Testament and you could only keep one thing from the Old Testament and had to get rid of everything else that would allow people to live peacefully with each other, I think we would all agree that it was the Ten Commandments. And if you took the New Testament and you could only keep one thing out of the Gospels and the rest of the letters and stuff like that, that would help people live peacefully with each other, I believe it would be the Sermon on the Mount.
Hmm.
What in the world could you take from the Quran and eliminate everything else that would help Muslims live peacefully with non-Muslims? Is absolutely nothing, because the entire book talks about Muslims converting non-Muslims either by the sword or by some convincing. Otherwise, they are of no use to Allah, and get rid of them. And it's just it's amazing when you really start to get into this. And speaking of the Old Testament, one of the funniest things I think that Muhammad got wrong is the story about Moses coming off Mount Sinai with the Jewish community wandering in the desert, and comes off Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments, with due respect to Mel Brooks and the history of the world, that we're not 15, we're just the 10.
Oops, 10.
But Muhammad relates to the Jewish community, which is just stunning. The fact that he believes that the Jews initially in the desert refused to accept the Ten Commandments, and that God had to raise the entire Mount Sinai from the earth, hold it over the Jews, and threaten them with crushing them with the entire mountain if they didn't accept it. So you could imagine now, looking through that 1,400-year-old lens or prism we were talking about earlier with King Arthur, with this guy coming into the Jewish community in Mecca and relating stuff like this that, you know, the Jews looked at him and thought, hey, this guy is nuts. You know, somehow you got this stuff wrong.
Totally misinformed,
anyway,
yeah.
It just, it's amazing when you read this. And see, this is the reason specifically that if you criticize Islam, they will kill you. Because somebody like me could never go to a Muslim-controlled country and begin to try and explain what I'm telling you today without them killing me and cutting my head off.
So freedom of speech isn't one of their options.
No, that's not one of their fine points. Okay, so, you know, besides that, and then you get these guys like Zudi Jasser, and I think he means well. I really do. Who says that Islam has to go through the same kind of reformation that Christianity did 500 years ago during the Middle Ages. You know, and but the problem is, if you accept as fact that every word in the Quran comes literally from God, how do you edit God?
Right.
How do you remove the 109 verses that say, go out and kill the infidel? How do you remove that? Those are religious obligations. So they have a real serious problem. So the reason that this thing again came down, supposedly as revelations to Muhammad, is because Allah decided that the Jews and Christians had corrupted the Old and New Testaments and they were not abiding by them, and that they had been rewritten. But there was a problem here in the Islamic community. In 1947... if you recall, the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered in Qumran, in the caves at Qumran. And when they took a look at these, and you can look up the Dead Sea Scrolls on Google again, all this information's right there if you want to take a look. The cave was in the province of Qumran in Jordan, and they took a look at these scrolls, and these scrolls are over 3,000 years old, and they have proven that the language and the Old Testament scripture has not changed whatsoever. And it's all written in the original Aramaic. And this is how there were portions many, many years ago of the Quran were found with the same Aramaic stories and grammatical expressions in there. So one wonders how it could be, you know, written in pure Arabic, which in fact in 600 did not exist. There was no such thing as pure Arabic. There were seven different dialects in the Arabian Peninsula, the majority of which were in the Syriac dialect, which is a combination of Aramaic and the Palestinian Syriac. Okay, so let's take a look and see what else is incorrect. In the Kaaba, by the way, I think I also mentioned last week the black meteorite. There is a small meteorite in there that's about a foot in diameter, and it sits at the cornerstone of the Kaaba, theoretically placed there, you know, back in, 615, I guess it was, by Muhammad. And then what happens is people of the elite and reputable politicians, they get to go and kiss this meteorite, which they believe was sent down to earth by Allah, of course, as a holy sign. But, and this is why you make the pilgrimage.
Okay.
Moving right along. All right. So if you take the word Allah and you take it as its conjoined terms, Al, meaning the, and Allah, Elah, E-L-A-H, meaning the one, Al-Allah, that's the moon god. And is one of the 360 idols, and the other 359 were destroyed by Muhammad when he conquered Mecca. Then we can go over to, for example, Jerusalem, which is interesting because Jerusalem is the second holiest site in Islam because of the Dome of the Rock on the Temple Mount, and that's where the original Temple of Solomon stood. The Wailing Wall is the Western Wall. and they built the Dome of the Rock, the when the Saladin conquered Jerusalem, they built the Dome of the Rock over this huge rock that is over the Well of Souls. And what's interesting is that there are a number of Aramaic expressions and stories that are engraved into that rock, and there are portions of what is written on the rock that wound up somehow in the Quran, and that's how the historians and the archaeologists are aware of how some of these foreign terms wound up in the Quran. Initially, Muhammad, in trying to explain to the Jews that he was the third and final prophet, said that everybody has to pray towards Jerusalem, not towards Mecca. And when Mr. Nice Guy, you know, went to Medina and became Mr. Not-So-Nice Guy, all of a sudden that's when Muhammad said, no, we're going to pray towards Mecca that we want to conquer, and we're never going to pray towards Jerusalem again. The only reason Jerusalem even figures into Islam is because one night Muhammad had a dream when he was in Mecca, and he dreamt that he was on a white horse, and the horse was standing on this rock over which they have built the Dome of the Rock of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and he ascended to heaven on the white horse, and this again, this is all in a dream, that he ascended to heaven on the white horse, and he met Jesus and Moses and sat there for a time that evening at the right hand of Allah, and then he was sent back down. And that's the only reason that Jerusalem even figures into the whole thing, because Muhammad never, ever in his lifetime left the Arabian Peninsula, period. Never was there.
Oh.
And there has never been any kind of an archaeological excavation where the rock sits over the ancient Well of Souls. So if you go back now to the moon god was a symbol, of course, in ancient pagan Arabia. And by the way, if you take a look, the average IQ of an Arab, a common Arab living in the Middle East, a common Muslim living in the Middle East, the average IQ is 78. And it's 78 because of 1,000 years of inbreeding. Everybody's marrying their first cousins, 78.
Wow.
Imagine what that IQ must have been, okay, 1,400 years ago.
Yeah.
So we're back to Fred and Barney Flintstone.
I think your earlier example was pretty good. We have to take a quick break, but before we do, we had somebody call in, wanted to know, how do they get an English language translation of the Quran? And I'm assuming we can do bookstore, you know, a local bookstore.
No, it's right... No, Aaron, it's on my website.
I know.
Don't buy anything.
No, I know, but they're not web people, which is why they're calling us.
Okay, if
they've got to get a book.
Okay, there are only a few of them that are legitimate. The rest of them have been sanitized for Western consumption.
Yeah, that's what
they take out those 109 war verses. So you want to get either you can get it right on Amazon. You can get it on Kindle. A Pickthall, P-I-C-K-T-H-A-L-L, Pickthall version, which is on my website. Yusuf Ali, Y-U-S-U-F-A-L-I, Yusuf Ali, is a legitimate one. And, the third one would be by Shakir, S-H-A-K-I-R. These are legitimate ones.
What was the Yusuf, what was the middle one with the U?
Yusuf, Y-U-S-U-F, that's the guy's first name, Yusuf, and his last name is Ali, A-L-I, like Muhammad Ali.
Right.
So the best one is Pickthall, and the title of it is The Meaning of the Glorious Quran. Believe it or not, by Marmaduke Pickthall. That is the best one. That is the version that is used probably by 75% of the English-speaking world.
Hmm. Okay. So.
And that contains all the verses.
That contains all 114 and 6,247 verses. Nothing is left out.
Nice. Okay, so if they didn't get that, give us a call back, and I wrote all that down. And then we will come back in just a couple of seconds here, chat some more with Mr. Peter Friedman. We are learning a lot today. Just in case you didn't learn any of this in school, pretty much like everyone, today's the day. Lots more where that came from. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's for sale.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460, Community Talk Radio for the North State, KCNR.
Hi, I'm John Scape, owner of Properties by Merit. We specialize both in residential and commercial real estate. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, call us today at 338-2112. At Properties by Merit, we help your real estate dreams become reality. Visit our website at pbmerit.com or call today, 338-2112.
Properties by Merit is California Corporation licensed by the California Bureau of Real Estate. California BRE license number 01945816.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
Is there anything more relaxing on a warm summer day than your patio? Budget Blinds is locally owned and operated and knows how to make your outdoor space in our area as comfortable as possible. Jerry and the whole Budget Blinds staff offers proper installation of patio shades and exterior window coverings, including solar shades, which can help you save on costly energy bills. Budget Blinds Redding Red Bluff also offers a variety of breathable fabrics and exterior window coverings, including window screens. Don't wait any longer. Give your patio or porch an upgrade with stylish, sturdy patio window coverings. Enjoy shades that gently filter passing breezes while perfectly complementing your outdoor theme. You'll relax on your patio or porch knowing you've got the perfect fit and highest quality service.
My goal for our customer here at Budget Blinds is when we walk out of the house, it's nicer than it was when we walked in. The customer got exactly what they wanted. If you're in need of custom window covering, give Budget Blinds a call today, 226-9027, or visit us on the web, budgetblinds.com.
KCNR, 1460 AM. If we're not talking about it, it's probably not important. KCNR, 1460 AM.
The more you ignore me, the closer I get. You're wasting your time. The more you ignore me, the closer I get. You're wasting your time.
So, I got a question, Peter. On with the statement you made about the IQ being so low, what how does that work with Obama's statement about the great academia contributions that Islam has made to the world?
Well, it comports very easily. It's more taqiyya. Take a look and see how many Muslims have received the Nobel Prize in medicine, in literature, in physics, in math. I believe there are four.
Ouch.
And that's about it. Otherwise, you know, you wind up with somebody like Yasser Arafat, who got the Nobel Peace Prize for, you know, making the pseudo peace with Arafat, you know, and Jimmy Carter and I mean, those don't count. I mean, even Obama got the Nobel Peace Prize, and he hadn't done anything.
And I think they wanted to take it back.
Yeah, I think they would love to take it back. But if you take a look, for example, as of about a year ago, there were 34 Jews who have won the Nobel Prizes in medicine, in physics, in just go look at the list. And I think there have been a couple of Muslims. I think there's a total of four altogether. But a couple, one won it in literature, as I recall, a couple of years ago. And, this whole myth, there's this whole myth. I mean, it even was propounded, for example, by Carly Fiorina right after 2001, 9/11. And she gave a speech to annual meeting of the Hewlett-Packard shareholders. And in that meeting, and you can Google this, I mean, the whole transcript is there. There's even a YouTube on it, where in the last 10 minutes of her speech, she said that the computer industry would not exist today had it not been for Islam. And I'm going, what?
What?
You know, and then people go, well, the zero was invented by the Arab. No, you know, they didn't. The concept of zero in math was actually discovered or propounded by the Greeks, for God's sake. It's all BS, all of this. There was, matter of fact, there's a great book because, Jesus, I'm constantly arguing with people about this myth about the golden age of Spain, you know, under the Muslims that we like to call the Moors. And that's an absolute myth. The Jews and the Christians were treated exactly as they are supposed to be in the Quran. And then people talk about, well, what do you have to say about Maimonides? Maimonides was a dhimmi. Maimonides was a nut. If you go read his Guide for the Perplexed, it was Maimonides who, in fact, who was absolutely ultra-Orthodox, who allowed for the local killing of Jews who were not Orthodox. I mean, just if you read this, there's a great book that recently came out called The Myth of the Andalusian, I'm trying to remember what it is, several months ago. I can't remember right now.
Paradise, Andalusian Paradise?
Yeah, thank you. The myth of the Andalusian Paradise. Absolutely fabulous book. You know, it's like Frank Burley's book, you know, it's all about Muhammad. I mean, people are finally coming out and they feel obligated or safe enough to start refuting some of this stuff from a historical standpoint because of all the revisionist history that our kids are being fed in school. And it's a bunch of revisionist history. Most people don't understand that the Cordoba Project at the Ground Zero Mosque, you know, in New York City, it was called the Cordoba Project in honor of the Cordoba, Spain Mosque, which was nonsense because the Cordoba, Spain Mosque used to be, for several hundred years, a Gothic Catholic church. It was a cathedral, which it is now back to that again, until the Moors invaded southern Spain, set up the caliphate there, and then, as they always do, they take a Christian or Jewish place of worship and they turn it into a mosque. And when finally Ferdinand and Isabella in 1492 defeated the Moors, sent them back to North Africa, and they completely cleaned out the great mosque of Cordoba, and they turned it back into the Catholic cathedral that it originally was constructed as. So this is just garbage. It's like when Obama says that Islam has been part of American history from our founding, that is absolute BS. It's nonsense, other than the fact in 1805, the first war that the United States ever was engaged in was with the North African Barbary pirates. And that was it. Remember we talked about that, the Leathernecks?
The Triple E.
Matter of fact, if you know a Marine Corps officer to this date, a Marine Corps officer, when he's commissioned, is given a sword, and the sword is an Arab sword. It is not a regular military sword like the Air Force and the Army and the Navy. They're not those swords. This is an Arabic Mamluk sword to commemorate the victory that we had in 1805 under the Barbary Pirates.
Tell people about the Leathernecks again in case they missed that program.
Oh, the leather, we call Marines the Leathernecks because when Thomas Jefferson dispatched them over there to beat the tar out of the North African Muslims for capturing our merchant ships and enslaving our crews, they knew that their thing from the Quran was cutting people's heads off. So what they did was they constructed these very thick leather collars that were about 4 inches wide, and they would put these leather collars on and they would tie them, you know, in the back. So if somebody tries to, you know, cut your head off, they're going to hit the leather collar and they won't take your head off. That's why Marines are called Leathernecks.
I'll bet you very
anyway,
few people know that.
I know, that's why I wanted to say it again.
Well, here you go. I mean, people that hope to get on Jeopardy should listen to these podcasts because, you know, these could easily be questions. Anyway, so let me get back to the moon god real quick. There in the Galilee, as a matter of fact, in the Sea of Galilee, there is a 5,000-year-old monument in the shape of the crescent moon. So we're talking about 5,000 years ago, which is what? 3,500 years before Muhammad was born. The moon god was also figured very prominently in ancient Babylonia, and we're talking about, 1500 B.C.? The moon god also was very prevalent in ancient Egypt. Where else? From Mesopotamia, which is now Iraq. And there are all kinds of obelisks. There are all kinds of reliefs that appear in the British Museum, in the Louvre, that I have pictures of where here's the crescent moon and they are praying to Al-Elah, the moon god. And, I mean, you got to figure that's where it came from. That's why, you know, it was in the Kaaba, because this stuff would migrate down from, you know, the Middle East through Syria down into the Arabian Peninsula. There are a number of moon god statues that, in fact, I have photographed in the British Museum from pre-Islamic Arabia going 500-700 years before Muhammad. And then again, we go back to the mosques. There is a crescent moon on all of the mosques. There's a crescent moon that sits on the flags of most of these countries. And it goes on and on and on.
And yet they always portray it like Allah is just a different name for the same God that
the same God, yeah, the God of Abraham.
Right.
Okay, so let me go back to the contradictions real quick since it's 1:30. The contradictions that are in the Quran, and everybody agrees that they're there, but, you know, you just don't talk about them if you're a Muslim or you're in a Muslim country because you don't have a leather collar. So, again, the chapter 1, the very first chapter in the Quran says that this is the holy word of God, and therefore everything in here is true. It is the literal word. This is what they believe. And this was transmitted by God through Gabriel to Muhammad up there in the cave. I have no idea what they were smoking in those days. But
I can take a shot at that.
That's okay. Okay, so
it's not that kind of show.
You go to the Hadith. Now, this is interesting. Remember I mentioned that he was an epileptic?
Mm-hmm.
In the Hadith of Bukhari, Aisha, who was his favorite wife, by the way, that's the girl he married when she was 6. Aisha, the number one wife, stated, quote, from the Hadith, I saw the Prophet being inspired divinely on a very cold day, and I noticed the sweat dropping from his forehead as the inspiration was over. Well, he was in the middle of a grand mal seizure. They didn't know what it was. Okay, again, we talked about the fact that in the Quran, in Book 85, it talks about the Quran being the perfect book preserved on tablets already in heaven. Obviously, the tablets were either wrong or Gabriel, you know, was imbibing in some of that good wine as he was talking to Muhammad in the cave, or Muhammad didn't hear it correctly. One way or the other, there are a ton of these things, okay? So going into some of the contradictions, let's see. Let me just pull this up here. Abu Bakr, we talked about. We talked about Umar. We talked about Uthman. Uthman finally had this whole thing codified around 650. So that was 18 years after Muhammad died. Let's see. So it was written on all kinds of different stuff. Okay, so again, the Quran being the literal word of God, there is the main statement on that in Book 96, verses 1 to 5. The dream, I'm just going through my notes. Let's see. It's created all that exists.
Hold on, five seconds, because we've got to take a quick break.
Okay.
So
then we'll get into the actual contradictions.
Okay. Yeah, thumb through that one, and we'll come right back with you, because we're slightly overdue here. How are we doing, Bob?
Pushing buttons.
Take us out.
Oh, yeah.
So hum a few bars. Mm-hmm.
I had another matter with a caller I was dealing with.
No worries.
Keep going or take a break.
Okay. Let's take our really quick break, otherwise we'll have them all at the end. So we'll just push the button and be unceremonious about the entire thing. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Obtaining a home loan is easier than ever with me, John Whitmarsh from Access
what?
Mortgage. We know how to say approve.
I've got
I promise to make your home purchase or refinance a smooth experience. So call me today at 945-9660. Let's get you into your dream home.
Access Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMLS number 1096314. Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Rob Burrows from the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center. It's time for the Boondocker Ball. Join us Saturday, August 27th at Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center. You'll enjoy an evening of dinner, dancing, costume contest, live auction, a 1940s World War II USO-style event. Dance to live music from the Lou White Band. Ticket prices are $35 single, $50 per couple, or sponsor a table of 10 for $500, which includes a $400 drawing package. For more information, see NorCalVeteransMuseum.org or the museum Facebook page. For ticket purchasing information, call our offices at 378-2280. Also, see Bastiani Arms on Larkspur Lane in Reading, right off Cypress. Tickets also available at the Classic Cafe on Athens Avenue. Once again, for more information, call 378-2280. Thank you for your support. We'll see you there.
Here's another energy-saving tip from REU, Redding's Electric Utility. Did you know dirty air filters can increase your monthly electricity cost? A dirty air filter will restrict airflow and make your AC work harder. Changing your filters monthly allows your equipment to operate more efficiently, saving you energy and money, and it may increase the life of your unit. For more energy-saving tips, visit us at reupower.com or call us at 339-7200. REU and you. Powerful together.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
A lot of songs about lying. You know, we talk about a lot of things that are based on lies.
Mm-hmm.
Good for all that music.
That's why we have to rewrite our history.
Exactly. Yeah, to cover up for all the lies.
Yeah.
Like the moon god. That's super interesting. I always wondered why they had that. So we're back with our guest, Peter Friedman. He's going to talk to us about contradictions in the Quran.
Okay. So, well, there's over 1,000, but let's just talk about a few of them.
Let's talk about the good ones.
These are some of the major ones. For example, question, could Allah have a son? All right? And remember that this talks about how the Christians corrupted their scriptures and the Jews corrupted their scriptures, and this is the reason, you know, that Muhammad showed up as the third and final prophet. So the question would be, could Allah have a son? If you go to book 39, verse 4, the answer is yes. And if you go to book 6, verse 101, the answer is no. Allah has never had a son. Okay? Even though they talk about Jesus being Allah's son in some of the other passages.
They do?
They also state in one of the passages that, in fact, Jesus wasn't crucified, that there was a surrogate that was crucified in place of Jesus, and Jesus just went home. To heaven.
That's convenient.
Okay, so another question that has been asked is, who brought the message of Islam to Muhammad? So if you go to book 2, verse 97, it talks about the angel Gabriel. But then if you go to book 16, verse 102, it talks about the Holy Spirit. You know, pick one. Okay, so, you know, when you state a name, that's supposed to be definitive.
Sure.
So, well, it's the Word of God.
Again, especially when it's a major historical figure.
Okay, so we're talking about, earlier, we're talking about the different percentages of language that the Quran exists in, such as 70% Persian and Syriac, part Greek, part Hebrew. So the question is, in what language is the Quran written? And if you go to book 16, verse 103, it says it's in pure Arabic. But then again, if it's in pure Arabic, which in fact didn't exist at the time of Muhammad around 600, you had 600 different dialects, something wrong here. Something wrong.
Well, 600 different dialects, how the heck did they communicate over there? You'd have to
Well, they had issues, you know. Yeah. It was probably a lot of hand gesturing with an IQ of around 50. So another very important question is Allah the only creator? If you go to book 39, verse 62, the answer is yes. But if you go to books 23, verse 14, and book 37, verse 125, no. And you go, wait a minute, if Allah's not the only creator, you know, then what? So then we talk about who takes possession of souls at death. Book 39, verse 42 says Allah takes them. Book 47, verse 27 says the angels take them. Make up your mind. then it talks about the angel of death, according to book 32, verse 11. You know, it's all over the place. I talked about the story of the Exodus. Was Pharaoh saved or drowned in the Exodus? If you go to book 28, verse 40, he and the army were drowned. So you find that in three places, 28, verse 40, 17, verse 103, and 43, verse 55. However, when you go to book 10, verse 92, Pharaoh and the army were all saved. They all survived. It's crazy. It's crazy.
And what's the response when, you have a debate with somebody and you bring these discrepancies up?
Well, they won't debate it with you.
Yeah.
Because if they debated it with you and they are a Muslim, they would then be subject to being killed. You cannot question anything in the Quran if you're a Muslim. And this is why if anybody does that, or the thing with the Danish cartoons and down there in Garland, Texas, they go crazy, and that's how they just keep a lid on it. So, anyway, just a couple of more here. The Quran talks about protectors. So if you're a devout Muslim and you submit as a Muslim to Islam, who protects you? Allah protects you only, according to book 2, verse 107, and 29, verse 22. However, The angels also protect you, even though the Quran says only Allah does, in books 41, verse 31, and 82, verse 10. So it's all over the map. Which was created first, heaven or the earth? The Quran in book 2, verse 29, it says the earth was created first. And in book 79, verse 27 through 30, it says that heaven was created first. You know, chicken and the egg.
Mm-hmm.
How many days did it take Allah to create the heavens and the earth? In three of the books, it says the earth was created in 6 days. And in book 41, verse 9 through 12, it says it was 8 days. You know, get it right.
Mm.
I mean, how did these, you know, creep in here? Noah, the story of Noah and the flood. Did Noah's sons die or live after the flood? Well, they die in books 11, verses 42 to 43, but then they live in books 21, verse 76, and 37, verse 77. So you can't, you know, it's just, you can't read this like a book. Because it's not. It's again, it's like Johnny Carson playing Karnak, and it's a whole bunch of answers in each one of these books and verses without having the question being asked that elicit this response, apparently, from Allah. And they're in no chronological order whatsoever from the ones written in Mecca and the ones written in Medina. They're all totally put in there based upon the length, which makes chapter 2 or book 2 being the longest one, and then when you get to chapter 113, that's the shortest one.
So it's not in any chronological order? It's in the order of length?
Yes.
Oh, no wonder.
That's why you can't just sit there and read the book.
Because it doesn't go in any order.
Well, do you think maybe the reason there's these contradictions is so that when they want to tell you what the Quran says, they can kind of pick and choose the version they like for that particular instance.
Bingo. You hit it right on the head. Good job.
You're all over this thing.
You gotta pay attention.
Hey, and somebody in the chat room also brought up that the moon god is actually a goddess. So is their god a girl? Or did they
did they
sex shift her into a man so they could worship a man, but they called it the moon god?
Well, it all depends what area of civilization that you're referring to.
Oh, should have
known.
You
know, there were goddesses in Egypt, Isis.
Oh, that's right. She was a girl too.
So they put some contradictions in there so that basically they could never lose an argument, or they don't have to argue because it's written right there, and that's the word of God, and we move on from there.
Oh, it's brilliant. I'll be the first person to tell you it's brilliant because it's got an answer for every possible question that you could come up with. But the problem is if you actually sit down and you read it, you will find all these contradictions. It talks about how many angels spoke to Mary about the birth of Jesus. So if you go to book 3, verses 42 to 45, there were several angels who spoke to Mary about the birth of Jesus. But then you go to book 19, verses 17 to 21, only one angel spoke.
So do they believe that Jesus was a Messiah, or what's their thought on that?
No, Jesus was merely another prophet.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they treat that. He was not crucified, and he was merely another prophet along with Moses, for example.
Okay.
How many gardens are there in paradise? According to four different books, there's only one. And according to four other books, there are many gardens in paradise.
So what about the 72 virgin thing? Is it, where did the 72 come from? We have multiple options on that one.
There is absolutely nothing in any Islamic literature that talks about 72 virgins. It refers to
the big lie.
Arabic. Yeah, the Arabic word. What was the reason for it?
Yeah, where did it come from?
You know, I mean, if let's
came
put
from
it
needing
like this,
people to blow
if
themselves
you die
up.
As a martyr. And you get access to 72 virgins in paradise. What about the next poor martyr that comes along?
Yeah.
So the question would have to be asked, well, wait a minute. If the first guy got the 72 virgins and they're not virgin anymore, however, when you read the Quran, it says that each time someone is martyred, The 72, it doesn't say the 72. It says the H-O-U-R-I, the Houri, which is Arabic for a young person, they instantly will become virginal again.
Oh, I was wondering, because it didn't sound like okay. being a virgin.
I was going to say they had like an assembly this? Line going up there.
Relate this to that average IQ. Okay?
That does make sales, sense of a lot of
things.
Sales
and marketing.
Yeah. There you go.
Sales and marketing. So anyway, just the last few minutes here, let me give you a few books here that are available.
Yes.
One is called The Secrets of the Quran by Don Richardson. An excellent book. And there are three books by a guy named Ibn Warraq. W-A-R-R-A-Q. And these are three excellent books. The first one he wrote is Why I Am No Longer a Muslim, because he read the Quran.
I bet he's popular.
Oh, yeah. Then the second book that he wrote is called The Origins of the Quran, which are a compendium of some of the best scholarship. He didn't write that, but what he did was he edited. He went out and he found all of these various essays and commentaries on what we've been talking about, and he collated them and put them into the book called The Origins of the Quran, starting with a German guy named Nolke, N-O-L-D-K-E, back in around 1860 up to pretty much the current time. And then the last one by Ibn Warraq is What the Quran Really Says. And again, it's edited by Ibn Warraq, a very renowned scholar. And again, it is more of this literature and commentaries and archaeological research that debunk a lot of this stuff. It goes into the grammatical syntax found in the Quran. It goes into all of the foreign words that go into the Quran. It just, it's amazing when you read all of this stuff. And there are an awful lot of Muslims who, you know, have taken a look at this stuff along the way. One of them is a dear friend of mine named Waleed Shubat. And if you go to WaleedShubat.com, he's got a website. You hear him on TV periodically. He used to be a Palestinian terrorist when he was 16, and his father was actually executed by the Israeli military for being a terrorist many years ago. And Waleed finally wound up in America and took a look at the Quran that he was raised on, took a look at the Old and New Testaments, and he is a very devout Christian today. Wonderful guy, but again, you know, he doesn't let anybody know where he is and where his family is, because they would come and get him, just like Salman Rushdie.
You know, I've heard him on interviews before. He is very interesting.
We need to get him on.
Yeah, he.
We're just gonna switch our whole show around. Yeah, we need an interpreter. You can be that interpreter. We've just assigned you the task.
Well, you get a hold. Go on his website and tell him that mention me and tell him that I told you guys that you got to have Waleed on there.
Okay.
He'll be more than happy to come on there. And here's a guy who was out in the street, you know, throwing Molotov cocktails when he was 16 years old.
That's what I was thinking. It would be awesome to get that perspective.
Oh,
okay, so we're gonna circle in on that. We've got to take one last quick break, and we're gonna come back, finish out the top of the hour with our I don't know, you're like a repository of information. Jeez Louise. Got the most books of anybody I think I know. Fabulous. Our guest Peter Friedman, you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And we put you in the backseat. Dominance. Submission. Radio's appear. From year to year, we looked up for the venture. Dominance. Submission. Radio's appear. Dominance.
Submission.
Dominant.
Submission.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004. But our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You'll never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
Playing ball is a fun and healthy activity. Unfortunately, the cost of organized sports participation is out of reach of many children. Ardwood and Play Ball Foundation's mission is to increase local youth sports participation through education, providing equipment, and fee assistance. Join us Saturday, August 27th at 10 a.m. for the Home Run Derby fundraiser at Big League Dream Sports Park, sponsored in part by Tugwell Roofing. Admission is free and includes a kids' venue, raffle prizes, concessions, and good old-fashioned home run hitting. For more information, visit us on Facebook or call 440-4211.
Dandelion. Unique gifts and clothing is the hot spot in Reading for all things fashion. Dandelion carries an amazing selection of Brighton jewelry, all the latest clothing lines, and every woman's favorite secret weapon, Spanx. Shop wonderful gifts in all price ranges and receive the best service in town. Check out Dandelion at 1322 Pine Street in the heart of downtown Reading. Dandelion.
National news with a local view. KCNR, 1460 AM.
That's me in the corner. That's me in the spot. Life, losing my religion. Trying to keep up with you. And I don't know if I can do it. Oh no, I've said too much. I haven't said enough.
Yeah, we could never say enough about this, that's for sure. Jeez Louise. All right, Peter, how do you want to wrap this up?
Okay.
You've got 5 minutes. Tell us whatever you want.
Okay. This is a blockbuster thing that's going on right now. If you go to Google, Google corpus, C-O-R-P-U-S, corpus in Latin meaning the body, coranicum, C-O-R-A-N-I-C-U-M. Meaning the Quran, the Corpus Quranicum. This is a project that is ongoing right now at the Berlin Academy of Sciences that is researching the legitimate and documented origins of the Quran based upon old Yemeni manuscripts that were discovered back in the 30s by a German archaeologist. And this will absolutely blow your mind. It's funded. The project is funded until 2025. But go to Corpus Quranicum and read what they are doing, because the Islamic world is going bananas.
And I'm sorry, who's funding it?
It's funded by the Berlin Brandenburg Academy of Sciences and Humanities. Mm-hmm. And what they are trying to do, based upon all of these actual pre-Islamic manuscripts that they discovered by accident back in the 1930s in Yemen, they are trying to piece together what the actual origin of the current Quran was. I mean, we know certain factual things about it. There were originally four editions. We know that in some of the later writings around 800, there were Muslim scholars who wrote that a number of things, you know, manuscripts and stuff, were destroyed by Uthman back in 650. Are you familiar, I'm sure you are, with the Council of Nicaea between Constantine and the Catholic bishops?
Yes.
Okay. So, essentially, the New Testament was codified and agreed to at the Council of Nicaea, you know, with Constantine after he won the battle with the, you know, assistance of the Catholics Anyway, that's a whole different story for a different Sunday.
Okay. Yeah, with a minute left.
That's how we get into this every time.
Yeah, I know. This is what occurred in 650 under Caliph Uthman. They brought in all of this material, and they went out to everybody within the Arabian Peninsula in 650, 18 years after the death of Muhammad. And they just brought all this material in here. They had a bunch of their people sit down. They went through it, and they agreed, which is why the Quran is so disjointed. And they agreed on all of this material that would go into the Quran, the codified Quran, that they would then standardize and copy and send out to all the provinces where Muslims were in control, so that people would standardize on this message and they would standardize on the scripture.
Peter, we just hit the big automatic line, and the news is coming up again. It's going to be silliness.
Happy to be back anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Peter. Our guest has been Peter Friedman. And his website is IslamThreat.com. And I'm posting all the links that he talked about today at WeThePeopleRadio.us. See you next week.
Let's roll, America. There's a battle to be won.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
Bill, Obama, they get the benefit of the doubt.
Donald Trump is set to make a major economic speech in Detroit on Monday. Hillary Clinton will do the same in that city on Thursday. There is good news for August travelers. Gas prices continue to go down.
Gasoline prices are still